The phrase, my aching back, has almost become a cliche for pain. But if you've suffered from back pain, you know it's no joke. You'll do anything to get relief. 90% of adults will experience back pain in their lifetime, and the cost of treating it is rising faster than the cost of any other modern medical condition. Yet according to our next guest, the majority of back pain is not due to a specific medical cause, but is lifestyle related. And prevention and early treatment is the answer, not surgery.
Wayne Rath is a physical therapy expert in the treatment and prevention of back, neck pain, and other musculoskeletal disorders. He's pioneered prevention-based programs that have been used across the U.S. over the past three decades. He was formerly a clinical assistant professor in the physical therapy school at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia, and has been recognized as one of the 20 most influential physical therapists in orthopedic physical therapy. Welcome to Take Care, Wayne.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
It's a basic question, but we'll have to ask it. What is back pain? What parts of the body are involved? Would you give us an overview?
I sure will. Well, obviously, back pain is on the rear side of the body, and if we're looking at the whole back, it starts from the back of the shoulders and goes all the way down to the bottom of the buttocks. And in general, we divide back pain into three regions. You have your upper back pain, you have your middle back pain, and you have your lower back pain. And lower back pain is really the king of all musculoskeletal disorders. It's the most common, and it's what we will be focusing on in this discussion today. Lower back pain in general is a non-specific term. It includes the lumbar spine. To the side of the lumbar spine, it includes what's called the loin area. It also includes down below in the pelvic buttock region, it includes the sacrum and the coccyx. So the three parts of the actual spine in the lower back is the lumbar, the sacral, and the coccyx. And then you've got the connection to the pelvis through the sacroiliac joints, which basically is the buttock area. So it's very important to identify those specific regions because that can lead to a more accurate diagnosis of the problem.
Wayne, what types of pain and symptoms are people experiencing when they complain of back pain?
Okay,
let's focus on the lower back since you said that's the king of musculoskeletal disorders.
Oh, it really is. The way I like to look at it is I group the pain, the symptoms that people experience with lower back problems into three groups: local pain, referred pain, and radicular pain. Local pain would be mean pain in that lower back region. It could be pain in the lumbar spine, which has very specific parameters, geographic, topographical parameters, which is from the bottom of T12 down to the top of the sacrum, which is S1, and as far out to the side as the back muscles, the erector spinae. You can also have pain in the buttock, which would be local, which chances are if you've got pain in the buttock but you've never ever had pain in the lumbar region, chances are the pain is coming from that buttock or pelvic region. The referred pain is when typically when the condition gets a little bit more aggravated, is made a little bit worse. The pain can also be sent into parts of the body which is not where the source of the pain is coming from. This is very, very common. So with lower back problems, it's not unusual at all for somebody to not only feel pain in their back, but to feel it radiating down from the back into the buttock, or from the back down into the thigh, or from the back down below the knee into the lower leg or possibly into the foot. 90% of all lower back problems involve local and referred pain. And that's very important because that falls into what's called the non-specific spectrum of lower back problems, which is which I'll describe a little bit further as we go on. Radicular pain refers to when the actual nerve root that's coming out of the spine and beginning to form the nerves that go down the back of the leg, which is the sciatic nerve, or the front of the leg, which primarily involving the back is the femoral nerve. Radicular pain is when the pain is coming from the nerve root itself. Now, this is in comparison to local and referred pain, this is very infrequent. It's you're going to find this in maybe 10% or at the most of the patient population, but in the general population, you're going to find this in only about 2% of the patients that people that experience back problems. The pain is very narrow. It's lancinating. It's much more in the leg. It's solely in the leg primarily. Although there may be some back pain as well, it is predominant in the leg. And there may or may not be some weakness associated with compression of the nerve as well. Very important to separate those three groups out.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And we're joined by Wayne Rath. We're talking about back pain, and you're mentioning the lower back. You know, I'm sure there's a wide variety of complaints that people have, and there's a spectrum of severity. I think that, you know, I know a lot of people who may get stiff after sitting in the car for long periods of time and need to stretch out. Other people don't seem to be bothered. First of all, are you seeing, what's the average age of the person that is suffering or comes in complaining of lower back pain? Sometimes I think of it as something that is chronic and people learn to live with. I wonder, why does it affect some people and not others?
Well, it affects pretty much everybody to some degree or another. And it certainly affects all ages. And you're seeing a growing incidence of back pain in adolescents at this point. Some people are attributing this to sitting more. Some people have attributed this to the fact that the average child is getting taller, yet the average school desk is, if anything, getting lower. Chairs are not designed for all the different sizes and shapes of the kids. And certainly there is a there is an incidence of back problems in the older, the geriatric populations. But clearly the peak of back pain is in the middle stages of life, somewhere between the age of 40 and 50 or 45 and 55 is when you're going to see the peak of activity-related lower back pain problems.
So when when you talk about activity-related lower back pain, are you saying that somebody does something that may trigger acute pain? So in other words, you may be living with low-level back pain and you think, oh, you know, I'll just take an Advil and get over it. But then something happens. I think anybody who's experienced certain types of back pain, it's shooting, it's muscle spasms, it completely grabs your entire body and you can't do anything about it. Is that usually an activity that's specific that triggers something that goes wrong?
Okay. The term activity-related lower back pain or spine pain was coined by the Quebec Task Force back in 1987, which was a special supplemental edition of the Spine Journal. And basically what they're, by using that term, they're trying to rule out all of the other problems that could be associated with inflammatory systemic diseases, medical conditions, congenital anomalies that are really quite different than what we're talking about in this discussion. So going back to your onset mechanism question, yes, many people will, quote-unquote, put their back out, just bending over to pick something up. But that's the straw that broke the camel's back. We've done a lot of study looking at the mechanism of onset of these type of problems, and we lump them into four groups. One group is where the patient cannot give us a specific reason, incident, or event as to how the problem started. They just know that it has started, and there is now a consequence that's impacting their lifestyle. There's another group where they perform a task that they've done hundreds, thousands of times before without any problem, like bending over to pick something up, and all of a sudden their back goes out. There's another group where there is a sudden or unguarded component of force associated with the onset. That would be like a slip, but you didn't fall, or you're going to lower something, and you lose control of it, and you try to grab it and catch it, something like that. And then the fourth cause is trauma, an accident, a fall, contacted or struck by something. And it turns out that the first two groups, no particular incident or event, or a normal activity all of a sudden creating a problem, they account for about 90% of the mechanisms of onset. So that means that the root cause to those types of issues are lifestyle and lifestyle habits. And when people are aware of that, and are educated and trained on how to recognize the warning signals and deal with those things, they are absolutely under the individual's control.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Rath.
And we are talking with Wayne Rath, who is a physical therapy expert on back pain and ways in which to, well, let's get to that point, ways in which to alleviate it. You mentioned lifestyle. You mentioned the importance of education and training. I can vouch for that because I am a back pain sufferer, and I just recently went through a bout of back pain, saw a physical therapist, and I learned that there are a number of habits that I engage in that are not good for me. And so I want to talk to you about prevention and early treatment, because you believe that's the key to avoiding or minimizing back pain. So what are the types of habits that we may engage in that aren't good for us, that probably we could change for the betterment of our health?
That's question right up my alley, and thank you for asking that. Probably, and this is nothing new, this has been around for a millennium, is good posture and good body mechanics. Our habits of how we sit, how we stand, how we move, how we push, how we pull, how we lift, carry, and even to some degree the positions and how we sleep. These are all habits. These are things we do without thinking. And if they tend to be poor, where they put too much strain on one aspect of the back, and they don't balance that strain or minimize or control that strain, that can lead to a cumulative or repetitive type of disorder. So the first thing in terms of habits, and it's actually core prevention element number one in our system, is people need to be made aware of where good, neutral, or mid-range posture is, how to find it. Right now, you are probably sitting, and if you're sitting and your back is slouched, what you need to do is you need to roll your hips forward, lift your chest up to the point where you feel a little bit of strain in your back, let that strain go, and then you're in a neutral position. You need to make that your habit. So that's the first thing.
So all this talk of sit up straight, have good posture, there really was a medical basis for it. I mean, we hear it from our parents, we hear it from our teachers growing up, but you're saying that good posture, I mean, I realize this. I tended to tilt on one side, and I tended to favor that, and that was what gave me problems. So when people talk about core, have a good core, stay straight.
Good learning how to find and keep good posture is the first step to learning how to strengthen your core, because your core is your back muscles, your side muscles, and your front muscles of your trunk. And what you need to do is you need to activate them to hold your spine in a neutral, protected position, so that your spine, the spinal joints themselves, do not get injured or do not get damaged ultimately through these activity-related things by compression. They get damaged ultimately by imbalanced end range tension, shear, and gliding. And what we need to do is control that, and posture and strength and stability of your core are at the fundamental keys to protecting your back.
We just have a couple of minutes left, and I was curious about some things that I've heard have helped people, and I wondered if you don't mind giving us your opinion, and we realize that everybody needs to deal with a medical professional in their own life and get advice. But I was curious if you thought, I have three things I want to ask you about: chiropractic, yoga, and the popularity of these inversion tables where you really are kind of upside down with support. Can you just quickly take me through those three things and tell me if you think that they can be helpful to somebody and maintaining their spine?
Sure. I get those questions all the time. And the first thing with regards to chiropractic is really what you're asking is, what is the benefit of spinal manipulative therapy or spinal manual therapy? And spinal manipulation is not only performed by chiropractors, it's performed by osteopaths, and it's performed by physical therapists. I myself have taught spinal manipulation courses all around the United States and Europe and down New Zealand. And spinal manipulation is a very valuable tool for gaining control of acute, subacute symptoms and for restoring movement. So it can be an excellent adjunct tool. But most of the research today is finding that you will get your biggest bang for your buck, if you will, if you combine spinal manipulative therapy with patient education and exercise. It is the combined effect of those three things that seems to have a much stronger impact, both in terms of getting a short-term benefit from the treatment, as well as beginning to invest in a long-term plan for prevention of recurrence and preservation of physical functional ability, which is a key for back pain. One of the most important things for back pain is to remain active. Matter of fact, I would recommend that your readers go back and your listeners actually go back and listen to a episode or a show that was aired on Fresh Air October 31st, 2007 by Dr. James Weinstein, who's an osteopath and the chief editor of Spine Journal, and also he's the head of the spinal unit or orthopedic unit at Dartmouth, and he is reinforcing all the same things that I'm talking about in this interview, and I would recommend that people listen to that.
Well, we just really have to wrap it up, and I just wondered, could you just comment on yoga and how that can be helpful, and what about the inversion table?
Yes, yoga is an effective tool for maintaining, restoring range of motion. Very, very important to taking care of your back. It also covers postural awareness and postural elements, so it can be a very important tool for that. And it also works on balance. But you need to invest not only in range of motion. We have found you need to invest in posture, body mechanics, strength, fitness, and you also need to have a very positive attitude when confronting back pain to prevent it from leading to inactivity or disability. As far as inversion tables go, temporarily, a lot of people will say it feels better. There's no long-term benefit to it. It has not been researched to any significant degree. However, traction in general has been researched and not been found to have a significant impact on acute, subacute, or chronic back pain problems. But the bottom line with back pain is it is a very individual experience. And if traction works for you and enables you to control symptoms, help restore function, and keep you active, then it's a tool that's working for you.
Well, you're right. Activity is the key. And I think that if somebody thinks that, oh, I'm just going to sit this one out, no, you got to keep moving. You got to keep going. Because otherwise, it sets you on a path that you don't want to go down. And as a back pain sufferer, I know this too well. Well, thank you, Wayne. You've provided us with valuable information, and we appreciate your time with us on Take Care.
My pleasure.